of knowing.
All right, man. Welcome to Pro 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 646. Jason Lindgren is with me, as is the returning Benjamin Balderson. We're going to be touching on alchemical ideas, and we're going to get some updates. But the reason I'm interested in this, because Ben does firsthand observation. Everything he says may not fall in line with what's typically accepted about alchemy, but that's exactly why I'm interested. And as an example of this, and we may talk about this, in alchemy, or maybe we should just call it natural science, when you do a thing, it's either works or it doesn't. It's correct or it's not. And when it's correct, it's observably correct. And that has been held outside of things like our medical system. And we'll probably talk about that vis-a-vis Jung and Freud. But to me, this all rests on the old hermetic ideas. And believe me, I have often wondered if the way we got these seven so-called laws, and by the way, you can logically work out that they are what they are. It's logical. You can accept it. It's true. But I've often wondered if we got some more that we never heard about. But just to refresh, there are seven so-called hermetic laws, which is mentalism, correspondence, vibration, polarity, rhythm, cause and effect, and the seventh being gender. And these are the base foundations as an idea of what I'm talking about. The description we typically get for gender is in everything. Everything has its masculine and feminine principles. This principle states that gender manifests in all aspects of life. Now consider the world we live in now, where English is becoming the world language. There's no gender in English. It was removed on purpose, from my point of view. And what we just read here from the natural sciences is gender is in everything. And yet we have a more modern language where gender has been stripped. These are all control mechanisms from my point of view. But we're going to get into this now. Welcome, Jason.
And a hot and humid good morning. And not only is gender getting stripped, it's getting garbled beyond all belief in the modern day.
I was about to make that point, and you're spot on. This whole gender euphoria thing that's being done with chemicals and social engineering is chipping away at the foundations of what is true in this world. And the damage that is done by efforts like this, it's, I don't know, you can't really sum it up. But let's get on here. Welcome back, Ben.
Thank you, Crow. It's been a long time.
What do you think? You suppose there's any chance that the seven laws were abbreviated in some way and that there are parts of this we never heard about?
I absolutely agree with that. This is one of my contentions with the Kabbalion, is it's even actually breaking its own rule. Because when you look at the way the Kabbalion's laid out, everything is a dissension. So the rule of mind, that everything started out as mind and descended from there. Now, in no way in the natural world can I make that happen. If I take a power source, no matter what it is, and I hold it out, it's got nowhere to go. It needs to have that negative polarity in order for it to move. And not only that, it needs a medium to flow through, which is what your mercurial aspect is going to be. So that negative is giving it directionality, a place to go to. This entire philosophy has evolved because they've taken out the way things actually naturally work into where anything can be anything. And that's just not the way it works. The negative is setting the shape for the positive. So it can only go in certain directions, do certain things. And they've taken that aspect out. And that's actually been in a lot of religions, anything new age. Even when I see Ken talk about it, everything's a dissension from the positive. And again, that's just not how that works. I also have contentions with the elemental processes, because this is the same problem. It's earth, water, air, fire. And then supposedly it starts out as fire and water, and those two combined make air. And then the three coagulate into earth. I can't make that happen in my laboratory. And then further, when you look at it from a more holistic perspective, like from doing the alchemy, everything on the oil side or the etheric side, yes, this matches that. The elements match that. You start out at the center earth line, you add some heat, it goes in, it turns into liquid, you add some more heat, it turns into vapor, you add some more heat, you end up reaching your plasma phase. Well, underneath the earth side, there's crystals, and the crystals don't react to fire the same way. This is the whole process of alchemy. And so there would be, earth would be the zero spot, and there would be three levels of more chaos, water being more chaotic than earth, air being more chaotic than water, and then fire being the most chaotic. Well, there would be three levels of stability underneath the earth, and all of that's been cut out.
Well, what you just said strikes at the point that there may be some missing things here, or I wonder if they're missing things, because what we get with these from the Kybalion mostly is a definition. So we're talking about mentalism and you're finding issues in your direct observation, but typically the definition for mentalism that we're handed is this: the all is mind, the universe is mental. Then it sometimes goes on to say the principle states that everything is a mental creation. And then it almost always goes on to state that our thoughts shape the reality. But the point I'm making here is, in the same way, I wonder if top level, I guess we could call them laws, were omitted. I wonder about the descriptions that we've gotten too, because what you just said can be logically worked out from one viewpoint, but from another, not so much. And I think that's a problem.
Absolutely, that's a problem. And one of the big problems is you see a takeover in the occult in the late 1800s with figures like Blavatsky, who never actually did lab alchemy. And then further with guys like Carl Jung, who in his Red Book, he talks about where he was trying to find a way to be descriptive about the things that he was envisioning, and nothing in the world that he was in, the mainstream world, had that. So he looked at some old alchemy books, and through looking at the pictures, felt that that was closer to what he was envisioning, and then went on to descriptively come up with a psychology that was different than the psychology that was the norm of the time. But it had nothing to do with actual alchemy. He was not an actual alchemist. And they named his version of psychology internal alchemy based off of having looked at these books. But when you, the philosophy of alchemy is directly tied to the lab. It was produced from the lab, which is what we're going to go through today when I talk about some of the things that I've had a greater understanding of. This is through watching these processes in the lab over and over and contemplating them all day, every day. So the philosophy was derived from that. Well, when you disconnect that, now the philosophy can get wild, because it doesn't have, like we were talking about with that ground, the ground that sets the tone, that's putting up the rails. Like, yes, this can happen inside of here, and these are some amazing things, but you can't make a boy into a girl. Things can get real wild when you don't have a ground.
Okay, before we jump into the meat and potatoes here, let's talk a minute about Jung, because I think it illustrates perfectly how the fallen system that we exist in now was shaped, which is to say, had we been openly educated about the natural sciences, there would be a lot more, we know this is true because we observed it as true. We know this is false because we tried to implement it and it didn't work. Jung and Freud are the perfect example of this. Jung went occult and all these other things. Apparently, we are told, had problems with Freud, but really Freud's the boy we got in the mainstream. And I think that's intentional. I think it's intentional to move us away from natural sciences. So things like the gender euphoria they're trying to implement now, based on the true statement that you can't make a boy a girl, which is observable in a lab, I think all this was teed up to start heading towards our fallen system. Lastly, in the book Autobiography of a Yogi, I think on more than one occasion, Yogananda asks another yogi, are you telling me this because you read it in a book, or are you telling me this because you experienced it within? And there is really the underlying issue that we're addressing. So what do you think? Did Jung get buried because he was too close to systems that prove by nature things are true?
Absolutely. And then also Jung was trying to bring in kind of the idea, and we use it today, where they talk about Zeitgeist, which is obviously there's shifts, and you guys did extensive series on this where these shifts are, they control them, but there's shifts in the public mind sphere, the public persona that happen. And Jung was trying to also delve in and bring that into it, understanding that, sure, there's an individual and you have individual thoughts, but no different than a mob where sometimes people get caught up in things. Well, this is the group mind. And sometimes that overrides your individual mind, but at the very least, that's almost always at least tainting your individual mind. And they didn't want all that brought into there also.
Yeah, I think the underlying idea was that if you get into a system like natural science, where a truth is a truth because it was observed, you wouldn't have the system we have now. And as an example, people often say, well, that's a coincidence. The idea of a coincidence wouldn't even exist if everyone was well educated on, say, cause and effect as one of the seven laws, right? Everything that happens is preceded by its cause. So really, it's not possible to have the idea of a coincidence. All right. So Ben, you, and I'm going to ask you, you think you see both a positive and a negative in the feminine now working in the lab. I'm going to ask you, do you suspect it or do you know it at this point?
No, I absolutely know it at this point.
Okay.
It's through the alchemical process and having a true understanding of the way these things are working. And also adding in mythologies and looking at the way, at some point, somebody who did have an understanding of these things and was looking at the natural world added in. So the first step when you're looking at the alchemical process is producing alcohol. And they've been calling the alcohol the spirit of the process. To me, this is then the negative feminine. And the negative feminine, this is always the first step. And this is a typical alchemy saying is the destruction comes before life. The death comes before life. So the first thing we produce in that is the alcohol, which is the negative feminine. Now, the alcohol is absolutely pulling, because what it's going to do is pull the positive feminine out of the plant. That's going to take the oil, which is something that I'm going to use in my final product, and that's going to rip that completely out of the plant. Now, one of the things that really set me off with this is when I'm looking, and this is using as above, so below, one of the laws, if I am working on metal alchemy, which you can eat the product, that's what you're supposed to be doing, is in taking these that product when you're done. Well, when I do the metal alchemy, the thing that corresponds to alcohol and spagyrics is acid. In no way would I ever leave acid in my final product that you're ingesting. That's absolutely insane. We go through quite a bit of work. You have to do a lot of washes out of your product to make sure that that acid is not in your final product. The same thing's going to apply to your alcohol. This is your negative side. This is causing the destruction. And it's interesting because when you look then philosophically, the destruction of everything is always inside of it. The seed of the destruction of this life was born inside of it. This shows itself as the alcohol, which is going to rip away the positive side of things and start this entire deterioration process before we go and put it back together in the great work.
So we should describe this real quick. This is the overarching, like if you ever read the book Spagyrics, which I think is a good place for people to start. And by the way, it's endlessly fascinating. The guy was a chemist and he wrote a book on Spagyrics. So he says things like alchemists call it this, chemists call it that. And when you get done, you begin to realize that chemistry stands on the shoulders of these old sciences, but they belittle it now. But to put this into context, Ben, you're starting with alcohol. So we're really talking about the spirit, right?
Right. But the negative side of it specifically. So I'm splitting the two things. And so the oil is going to be the spirit That's the positive side. And that's what we're going to use later in the experiment in order to put things back together, where right now we're using the negative feminine, which is the destructive. And that's going to tear things apart.
Okay, so let's just frame it up for folks. The basic overarching idea, which I cut myself off before, is a human being can become engaged in spagyrics or alchemy. They can take something like a plant, rip all the parts apart. Well, what are the parts? Typically, they're described as spirit, soul, and body. Typically, with plants, the alcohol is always going to be the spirit. Most of the time, the salts are the body, and so on. What a human being can do, because they're special, is take all the parts apart, purify them, put them back together, and then this perfect thing from nature has been exalted to be a little more perfect. Do you think that's a fair way to describe it, Ben?
Absolutely, what's going on.
Okay, so that's the process of what Ben is involved with. And I would recommend get the book Spagyrics, because if you've never learned about this, it's a good thing to have a foundation. Now, if you look at all plants around the world, the spirit is the same in all plants. It's always alcohol. And I can prove this to you by sending you to a liquor store. If you go into a liquor store, you will grab a bottle of booze, and what will it say? Spirits. There's a reason for these things. The problem is, in the modern era, we read spirits and we think it's just a nickname for booze. It is not. It is a throwback to times when what we're talking about here were better understood, or to put it more simply, when we were closer to an honest, truthful system. So carry on. You're at alcohol and you found a destructive feminine and a nurturing feminine found in alcohol and oil.
Absolutely. And some of this, so the more classic understanding is they put the oil as just the sulfur. And this is where part of the problem comes in, is the sulfur. Now, some of these processes I'm able to do where they weren't able to do 200 years ago. So where I got some of these understandings is because I do a flash freezing instead of doing the more traditional setup. So what a person would normally do going through the alchemical procedures, you would go and pick a plant before the sun comes up in order to preserve all the oils, because the sun immediately starts baking off these oils, which is the positive side of the feminine. You're trying to preserve that. So you would go pick your own plants. You probably grew them or they were wild before the sun comes up. And then you would dry them in a cool, slightly humid area to try and keep it so it dries fairly slowly. And again, try and let what you're trying to do is let the water out and preserve the oil in the plant, whether it's that's where your spices are getting their flavors, tea, anything like that. So you're trying to release the water and keep the oil at the same time. And then after the plant is dried, then you would start the entire process. Well, because I have the ability to flash freeze things and do the entire process at negative 150 degrees. And then also when you add in, there are certain hydrocarbon gases and things like that that are able to not bond to water, but will still strip out the oils. So I take the plant while it's still alive, and before the plant even realizes it's been cut down, it's already at negative 150. So then when I extract out that oil, one of the first things I noticed is that the oil in it has a brilliance, like an almost neon life to it. And when I compare that to the oil that's been dried, that color dulls down substantially. Your typical green plants put out like a bright yellow oil. And like I said, it'll look neon colored when you extract it when it's still alive. And as soon as you've let it dry out and die some, it goes down to a more golden color or a deeper gold. And if you let it go further than that, it starts turning more of a reddish purplish and eventually becomes black.
Instead of drying a thing, you're freezing a thing.
Yes.
So I gotta ask, I mean, the third law is vibration. And so I've got to ask what the difference is. If you use your freezing method and you did the other typical method without the freezing and you dried it, what would the difference be in the two end products? Because I know because of these laws that the third law is vibration. And if you freeze a thing, the vibration of any given thing has been slowed down drastically. So is there a difference in the final product that you've noticed?
Absolutely, there's a difference in the final product. Rose has used some of my products and can tell you the difference between my products and other products. This maintains the life force in it. So this is what I came to realize, because through the distillation process, that color I was just talking about that the oil goes through, the three levels of oil in the plants are actually all clear. And so there was something besides that oil in and of itself that was changing. And for me, this is the life force in the plant. And when you let the plant dry out after you've cut it down, that life force leaves the plant. And when I flash freeze it, I'm able to preserve that life force and maintain it and then imbue it back into my product.
Wow. So let me ask, typically when you freeze things, the cells pop. So you're flash freezing it. Are you freezing it in a way that the cells remain intact?
They're absolutely not going to remain intact, but this is why you have to do this process fairly quickly. As you said, they're going to actually explode and you're going to start losing cell integrity. But the cell in and of itself, I'm going to actually remove the sulfur and the oil from the cell. And so this is not a problem. It actually works out well because the whole, it's got nowhere to go yet. It's still at negative 150. And while it's still flash frozen in that state, I rip everything that I want out of it. So it comes out that much easier. And then I keep it. This is the thing with alchemy. The difference between doing it out in the open air and alchemy is that I'm containing it. And so none of that goodness has anywhere to go, but stays in the product.
In the flask that's sealed. But I've got to ask, I've read, and this is the idea that Walt Disney froze his head, that if you can freeze something cold enough, quick enough, the cell remains intact.
It very well could. It very well could. I don't try to do the bring things back like that. I'm putting them through the alchemical process, which is then taking out the earth components or the ego components and trying to get to the purity of whatever it is that I'm working on, the prima materia that I'm dealing with. And so that cellular material is actually something that is part of the earth. When we look at the alchemical process, the three things that we give back to the earth that we don't keep in our end product is the water, the carbon, and the cellular material. The water typically is the first thing you would evaporate off. The carbon is what you're burning out. And the cellular material is that ash at the end. When you're doing the leaching of the salt out of the body of the plant and getting down to the actual salts, you're left behind with the white ash, which was the cellular material, the body, the cellulose, cellulite, the thing that was making the shell for that life to happen in. And those three things belong to the earth and you give them back to the earth. And then we get down to the purity of you, which is your salt, your sulfur, and your oil.
Okay, so let's stick to the points because we've got a bit to go through here and I kind of led you off a couple times. So what you've described so far, how does that impact the great work or the end result? And you started to address it when you said Rose had tried your method.
Absolutely. So one of the things that you start coming to understand then is the oil has the sulfur in it. The sulfur is that life component that through the flash freezing, I'm able to get while it's still fully alive. And that's riding inside of the oil. Throughout the great work, as you're getting through this, what you're going to try and do is get that oil to open up the salt and that sulfur to enliven the salt. So when I started looking and matching that like up against mythologies, like the Norse creation myth, you have the all. And the all splits into just a basic positive and negative, a masculine and a feminine. And the problem is those two completely balance each other out and there's not any life. There's no interaction yet. So the masculine side splits into two things. They're called Muspelheim and Niflheim. But this is the world of ice and the world of fire. Understand both those things are masculine. So the masculine split itself into a positive and negative. Because the masculine side is material and the feminine side is the immaterial. Well, then the positive wants to rise and the negative wants to sink. So these two things push away from each other. Well, this is where the feminine comes in, and the feminine void pulls these two masculine sides together and smashes them together. And this is where life happens, is in the Vesca Pisces of these two worlds smashing. And this is, again, why the destruction happens before the life. So then now I understand that there's a high masculine and a low masculine. And through the feminine, these two things have been brought together. Well, in the great work, then, what you're trying to do is heal the masculine side. So through the feminine, the two masculine components are going to be brought fully back together. Not in this Vesca Pisces way where they're just brushing up against each other, but they're going to be brought back fully together and you're going to have the full access of both sides. Well, that only came through the understanding of this sulfur component riding inside of the oil. And because of being able to do my experiments through flash freezing, I was able to see the differences in that oil or in that sulfur component in the oil.
So from an observer standpoint that doesn't know a lot about this, you could start to determine gender by the action of what you're working with. If you're working with a thing that splits things or breaks it down, you're going to call that masculine. And the inverse of that is if it draws them together or combines them, you would call that feminine. Is that correct?
Yeah. So your solvent action's always going to be a feminine action. Absolutely. And this doesn't matter whether it's electrical, whether it's chemistry, anything. You've got three things, a positive and a negative. These are both masculine. And then the medium that they're able to transition through, that is going to be the feminine. The feminine thing is going to be able to make that transition. This is why your mercurial character has kind of a feminine aspect, because we live in the material world. So the true feminine is not being represented. That's the void. The void, we know from science that voids immediately get filled. They do happen, but they are immediately filled because we live in a material world. So the Mercury is doing the action that the feminine side would do. And this is why all transactions have to happen under Mercury's purview, whether it's monetary, whether it's verbal communications, electricity, travel, all those things, because only where the feminine has set that bounds, where those two things are able to transition, can they transition.
So if I was to go look up the supposed mythical god Mercury and look at the things that are attributed to him, I would begin to realize that there's an echo of natural science with what's been attributed to this supposed god.
Absolutely there is, including even his original story, which is him stealing Apollo's cows. And if you've studied a lot of mythology, there's the horns of Hathor. In heathen cosmology, we have the great cow Adumbla. This represents the sun. This is why the golden horns, well, he takes the sulfur side, which is going to be your sun, your positive, and he takes it down into a cave in the earth. And then he brings back the lyre, the sound that the seven strings, and gives that to the upper side. So he's making a transition between these two sides. He's now set the different levels of where things reside.
Okay, we're going to need to move forward. But the point, just so people recognize, is when you look at all these old myths and you see a god, quite often it's encoded aspects of nature, and the abilities or the things that this god does almost always correlate with what Ben's talking about. And just for the record, if you didn't realize, Mother Goose, believe it or not, is encoding all kinds of alchemy. There are claims out there that the reason we have these fairy tales, such as Mother Goose, was to encode this information, which was going to be lost. But Ben, that brings us up to sulfur. Jason, anything you want to add before Ben does sulfur?
Would you say that most, if not all, of the myths you're referring to are actually just encodings of alchemical or natural concepts?
Absolutely, I would say that. And the reason for doing that in a myth is because that's something that we understand, the idea of esoteric and exoteric. And exoterically, most people have no interest in this. They like the bread and circuses. This is how the controllers came to understand how to control the masses. the masses, this is what they enjoy. So you need an exoteric story that's able to carry this information in the general public. So that way those who would have the interest and the ability to dive into the esoteric are able to do so because the bones of that have been kept and maintained.
And isn't it interesting that we can grab any scientism-based book off the shelf and find issue after issue of where things are clearly not true? But then when we take time to go into the fictionalized Mother Goose stories, what we find is things that nature proves are true. And what I'm referring to here is the whole reason why if I look at Greek mythology and then I look at like Viking mythology, the same tale is being told because nature proved the tale is true. They're just wearing different costumes and writing on a different language.
Absolutely. We have different ways of describing the natural world that we're all observing, but at the end of the day, the world works the way it works.
That's right. There is no, you know, kind of, sort of. Anyhow, that brings us to sulfur, Ben.
So with that understanding, we understand then that the sulfur is the high side of things, the fiery side of things, and that this is the part that's most subject to degradation in the experiment. When we look at the salt side of things, salt is very stable. So this isn't as subject to degradation as the fire side is. So we're truly, with this flash freezing method, that is the thing that we're able to maintain. And then when we go to put the experiment back together with that, now, again, the great work is taking through the oil and having the sulfur enliven the salt. We see this in all kinds of different occult and mythologies where the low side is the soul chained to the stone. That literally is the crystal side. It's chained. It can't move. It's unable to free itself. So you imbue it with the life side, the sulfur side, and this is what frees it from that chains. And the sulfur is the big light and the salt is the little light. You even see this in Castor and Pollux. Castor's your big shining light. Pollux, while they typically talk about him being the defiler, Paul means hidden and Lux means light. So he is the hidden light, and it's two brothers. Whenever you look at these myths, there's a reason that the feminine is only one character, but that one character has two sides to it. It has a destroyer and a life giver. And then the masculine is two separate beings. And so the masculine side, and this is just like Niflheim and Muspelheim, one side's fire, one side's ice. And so it's represented by two bodies. The feminine side doesn't split because it's the immaterial. So it does two different tasks.
In the example you've used, one of them lives forever and the other one dies. There's also a night and day connotation, but then the sulfur is representing, for lack of better terms, the soul's journey. And when you were mentioning the salt, that is the body. So in the alcohol, we found the spirit. In the sulfur, we find the soul or the soul's journey. And in the salt, we find the body. And those are basic foundations of what you're talking about.
Yes. And when we're doing the positive side of it, we switch the alcohol for the oil. And these are the two sides of the feminine. So we go from the negative, which starts the journey and breaks things down. And then we switch to the positive and through the positive, because in my final product, I won't leave alcohol, but I will obviously leave the oil. In the final product, you're going to have the marriage. When you put this all together, you're going to put the oil, which has the sulfur riding in it. And then you're going to mix that with the salt. And in the digestion inside the sealed flask, you have to let the process go. You put it under slight heat and just let it sit. And they call that the digestion. Well, what's happening is that sulfur is going through the oil and imbuing into the salt. So this is literally the healing of the masculine side then. And that's through the oil, which is the positive feminine.
Okay, so I want to get into the flash freezing a little bit more. And this is why I'm fascinated by what you're talking about, because of the Gerson method. For those that have followed people cured cancer decades and decades ago, one of the methods was the Gerson method. Basically, where Gerson differed was he nailed down what nutrients the body needs to build itself back, and he did this through fruits and vegetables mostly. and he turned them into juice, which is a bit like the alchemical process, because how many apples would I have to eat to get, say, an 8-ounce glass of juice? Probably more than one, maybe even a few in some cases. But the point is, the way Gerson did the juice was really part of the secret sauce. While everyone else was heating or using maceration blades, destroying every cell, and remember what Ben was talking about, getting that life force, what Gerson did was kept everything cool, cold pressed, and pressed it without destroying the cells. And the reason why is what Ben's talking about. The life force was retained in those cells. And that is what really put the secret sauce into Gerson, besides recognizing what you needed to combine. But there's a hell of a correlation there, wouldn't you say? What you're saying is you flash freeze and you can temporarily trap the life force. And by the way, does that get a moniker or a designation in alchemy?
I have not found that information in alchemy. Actually, one of today's foremost occultists, he wrote Occult Germany, Occult Russia. I actually, he was talking to you guys, but he was waiting for his new book to come out before he finished off with that. He was absolutely in shock over it also. And I think it's just because they didn't have availability to this flash freezing. And 100% what you were saying was spot on. The life force in it is part of what you're trying to take in. And if that's a degraded life force, you're just eating dead material.
Which is the American diet, by the way. Almost nothing we eat is alive anymore.
Absolutely. It's been preserved so it looks similar to what it did when it was alive. But anybody that grows their own food, goes out in their garden, makes like something as simple as salsa, and the way it has that zing on your tongue when you eat a fresh orange, the way it almost feels, you feel kind of lively, like you can literally feel more life force in you. And all of that's been degraded and is dead. You're just eating rotten material is all you're doing. And they've made it so it looks like it's not going to. Just like with your meat, they have that chemical that they put on there that keeps it pink so it still looks like it's nice and fresh and lively. And it should have turned into gray nastiness that you would have never eaten months ago.
They've outlawed healthy in this country. That's what homogenization and pasteurization are about. When you pasteurize a thing, you boil it so everything is killed. The difference between going to Europe and, say, getting some cheese is the European cheese has not been pasteurized. There's life force in it. When you eat it, you're ingesting life force. When you come to America, you're getting a thing that's been sterilized, basically. And where I am, one of the last apple pressing places was just shut down not too long ago because the health folks and government said, you're going to kill people because that life force is actually bacteria and it's going to make people sick. You have to start boiling your apple juice that you want to give to people. So in this country, the last place I was aware of that give living juice to people was forced to change the way they did. But let's cut to the chase here. How does what you're doing compare to doing the typical method where something is dried? And anyone out there who's a chef comprehends, say, with herbs, what dried means. Like if you have a handful of dried herbs and a handful of fresh herbs in your mind, which one is going to give you more bang in your sauce? Well, counterintuitively, it's the dried one. You need 3 times, as a general rule, the fresh to match the potency of the dried. And so you're not drying at all. You're flash freezing, and your stated goal is to keep the life essence. So how does it compare to the other method?
So part of the reason that they need to use dried is to access that oil, you need that water to kind of get out of the way. And so for you to be able to really get access to it, like when you go and dry your plant material, you'll notice that the plant was approximately 80% water and that you can start out with a giant bulk of material. And by the time you're done drying down your water, you just have this small little pile of plant material left. It's really kind of amazing. You really thought you started out with something and then it just shrinks and shrivels into nothing. And so the water is what's creating the real problem with that. Well, with the flash freezing, it's doing 2 things. It's locking that water up And then also on a lighter level, it's locking up the lipids, which is very nice. Because that's what, like, when you look at butter, when you try and clarify butter into ghee and whatnot, that lipids is what's in there. It's actually, it causes them to get held back too. So you're just getting the pure oil and the pure sulfur coming through. And in order to be able to do that, you have to use a nice, clean hydrocarbon gas in order to do that. Butane is probably the best one to use, in my opinion. But even despite what people would think, like propane, if you get super pure propane, things like that will also work. And what you're doing is you're bonding to that oil and to that sulfur, and it's able to move through that frozen water and rip that out and keep that. So it's almost just kind of sneaking it away without having to do a lot of the normal destruction that needs to happen. It's able to slip through those cracks and grab onto it and pull it out. And you leave it. It's kind of amazing when you do it, because then you look at the product after the fact and it doesn't even look like anything's happened. Things that have like a crystalline structures on their surfaces and whatnot, the structure is still there, but the oil is gone from it. It has been ripped clean out, taken away. And so with this, what I would say is a more gentle method of the extraction of such, that life force in there, that same pizzazz that I was talking about, that spiciness that comes with eating things directly out of your garden that are still alive, my end product has that same feature in it. Only I've also been able to take out and burn out the things that I don't want while preserving that, which is a very special thing, because anytime you go through destruction, you're going to have degradation, especially on the feminine side of things, where this is part of why you don't scorch your oil. Your scorched oil, it never comes back. And so when I'm able to do this without turning any of that, then the life force is in it. And this is what we're trying to do when we're going through this pituitary process.
But what is it? Is it a vibration? Is it a liquid? Is it a gas? Is it a quality? How would you quantify describing the life force?
I would say it's a quality. And then also it's the subtle power behind it. Because the fact is it's not as effective when you've let that life force die. You lose the efficacy of the product 100%.
Which is shown in the Gerson method.
Yes, exactly.
How do you know if you've succeeded while you're doing this? Is this something you plan to do? Is it something you stumbled on? And how do you know you've achieved it?
You can actually visually see the difference out the gate. And then also in your final product, when you're getting to the stone, the way that it'll crystallize compared to a degraded product, like a severely degraded product, is really hard to crystallize. It's hard to bring into that form, into that stone form, and get it into a plutonic solid. But when it's fresh like that, oh, it'll make shards. It'll make shardy crystals.
So we've described before, I noticed here in your notes, you had listed the modern pharmaceuticals as doing the dried method as counterpoised by your flash freezing. We've pointed out a number of times, and I think this might come from the book Spagyrics. I'm not sure, but I think it's been a while. The way the pharmacies are employing alchemy, or what they call chemistry, which in my mind is a lesser form of alchemy, is that they break it apart, as Ben's been describing, and then that's it. They work with that. Now, to refresh your memory, in alchemy, you break it apart, you purify it, you do the alchemical wetting and put it all back together, and it's a little bit better than it was before you intervened. And to make the point, they just do the breaking apart, which I think what you're talking about is fascinating. And if I didn't know about the Gerson method, I wouldn't even know how to think about what you're describing.
And then also, they don't take into account that not all these components. So when you look at a component chemically, two things can be exactly the same, but they aren't. Even if they're chemically the same, if the molecule looks exactly the same, but they're derived from two different sources, they're not the same thing. They don't have a problem. Like if something's hard for them to make, like even take something like citric acid, most people would assume citric acid is just a derivative of citrus, where they've taken, maybe squeezed out some grapefruit or oranges or something and extracted out the citric acid. That does exist, but they don't do it that way. They get a much better result and are able to commercially come up with something so it's viable through growing it on mold. And then they extract it out of this mold. And that's the citric acid that you're getting, but it's in your brain, you're still imagining it something coming out of a grapefruit juice or something like that.
The difference being the difference between man-made and synthetic, or synthetic and natural, really is what we're talking about, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And these synthetics, they don't have the same efficacy in your body that the natural does. When you're looking at old school alchemy, if anybody ever reads Frater Albertus's Alchemist Handbook or any of those others, they will explain that the most common thing to use when most people, when they're starting an alchemical experiment, they'll use outside alcohol. If you're using outside alcohol, they will tell you that the best alcohol to use, even though alcohol is alcohol, that the best alcohol to use is from red wine grapes. And then you distill that seven times, six times at one specific heat. And then actually, once it's reached really high purity, you can turn the heat down ever so slightly because you're trying to get those more stable oils and things to stay behind. And you're getting the alcohol in and of itself to come out. But the actual thing that's best is to ferment your own plant that you're using, and then through its own alcohol is what you're doing your extraction with. And it makes an absolute difference in the end quality of the product, which this is what we're trying to do with Spagyrics at all, is, as Crow said, bring something to a greater efficacy, bring it to where this same product has more potency and has more bang for the buck. We want to do that as best as possible. And every one of these little things takes off that potency and that efficacy. And on the flip side, compared to the natural medical world, the alternative world then went to essential oils, which then completely leaves out the salts. And the salts need to be added back into the experiment, or else you, again, don't get the same efficacy. This is part of why Rick Simpson oil, you hear Rick Simpson oil touted quite a bit, but then the cleaner products such as dabs or something like that, they lose that magic. They aren't claiming that those heal cancer or any of those things. That's because the salts are still in Rick Simpson's product, because it's a super dirty extraction. The original was done with naphtha. It's pulling out everything. You're still having a lot of the plant material in the extraction in and of itself, which because of that, it has the salt still in there. So it's actually getting a more medicinal benefit out of it than a lot of times you're getting with these essential oils. So both sides are kind of taking half of the equation and running with it instead of doing a more holistic. And I would actually even say the Gerson methods is similar in that way to Rick Simpson. Not that it's a dirty extraction, but that you have the Gerson method, it's holistic. They're pressing out and they're keeping all of it. There's still some of the body in there. You're still getting the salt minerals along with the oil and the sulfur. So you're getting a holistic thing. But when you do the full alchemical process, you've burnt out all the pieces, the carbon, the water, and the cellular material. So you're able to get a complete version of that without the things that are stopping the wholeness of it.
What you're talking about here, particularly where we started, which something synthetic could be identical chemically to something made in nature, yet everybody knows the one made in nature is better. Couldn't we consider the work of Dr. Emoto to begin to comprehend what's going on here? For those who don't know Emoto, he basically demonstrated that you can put intention into water. You could put words like death, murder, you could speak them to a bottle of water, or you could write it on paper and stick it to the water and freeze it and then examine the crystals. He proved, and anyone can do this at home, that if you put the negative connotations, you get these malformed, ugly crystals. If you use words like love and positive intentions, the exact opposite happens. And so while you could use the very same water and give one negative intentions and words in the other, the final outcome hasn't changed the chemistry, but the crystals, which to me means the vibrations, have changed. If it's true that everything vibrates and cymatics demonstrates that all form can be thought of as vibration, then the difference we're talking about maybe, Ben, is that when nature makes a thing, it has that vibration of life in it. When something is synthetically duplicated, it lacks that lively vibration. Do you think that's a fair way to think about it?
Oh, that's absolutely right on. That's absolutely right on. You have not got that life component in there. And that really is what's bringing up the efficacy of the material.
So I got to jump in here. We're coming close to the top of the hour. We covered a lot. Ben, do you want to offer people websites or anything? Do you have anything you'd like to offer out before I wrap hour one?
Yeah, anybody that wants to come listen, I'm on Benjamin Balderson on YouTube and on any Deliberating Dog Face Dudes on any of your podcast apps or anything like that. And if you want to contact me, just Benjamin Balderson on any social medias. We've got quite a few products that we make now that are really quite amazing. We've got a lot of people in the community that have used them. We've got a comfort cream that is super popular, absolutely just amazing to use. My wife makes this burn banish that we've even used it on. My friend and partner Brian got into a explosion and his skin was literally hanging off of him. He never went to the hospital, never had any of that treatment. We have progressive pictures of just using that burn banish and Manuka honey and some colloidal silver to keep away infections. And we didn't do any of the procedures that they do that are just absolutely horrible. But I make quite a few different products if anybody's interested in those kind of things, like my gut fixing product that's made to also activate your immune system. I grow all the vegetables and everything that is put into there on my own farm. My growing is all done permaculture growing. There's no chemicals. We use my own alpacas and cows and chickens and whatnot. I collect all their manure. I collect the bacteria and fungi that I populate it with and break it down and build all my own soil, anything like that. So just get a hold of me on any social media. And thanks.
Yeah, go, Ben, go. Just a quick yes or no. Have you ever taken the Rick Simpson and purified it and exalted it?
Yes, sir.
Wow. Maybe we'll talk about that when we come back. We got to take a short break. Coming up in hour two, we're going to complete the process using alchemical procedures that Ben has recognized. Maybe you could say on a subtler level, the idea of finding both polarities in a feminine. But basically what we're talking about, everyone should have a foundational idea of not just the seven hermetic laws, which are logically correct, but the natural science that we're talking about, often referred to as alchemy. Everyone should comprehend salt, soul, and spirit. In the context of what we're doing, we're talking about plants. So the spirit is alcohol or methyl alcohol, as we've described. The body is going to be salts, and then the sulfur is the souls. But beyond knowing this and comprehending this, this is a foundational way of thinking about the world, which is not an error. And that's why this is important. So tune in for hour two, where we complete the process to include things like terpenes, crepuscular light triggers, the true alchemical stone, according to Ben, the sulfur tree, and so on. And we also touch on what the pharmaceutical companies are doing that isn't that helpful. This has been hour one of episode 646. In a few minutes, we're going to pick up for hour two. Members know to log in to crow777radio.com to get access to everything. They get access to all the comments sections and the forums, and they can create top-level ideas to speak about. They can stream the two-hour film called Shoot the Moon. It now has 10 awards in the world. It covers all my older telescope work. And by the way, the discovery of the second sun from 2015 is included at the end of that film. Many people go back, watch it more than once. Also, members of crow777radio.com get exclusive access to my current solar work. Now, I'm working on the 18th member-only solar video, and I have shot some of the best footage to date in the last 2 months, which have been precious few days because the weather has allowed less than double-digit shooting in every month. Some months have only given us 1 or 2 days. That's how bad the weather's been for filming the sun. With that, I hope you'll join us a member for hour two, and I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. There it is, man. Cheers.
Belief is the enemy of knowing.